The Tom Woods Show, episode 1511.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Come on now, folks. If you ain't going to start that side hustle now, then when? Check out my free ebook, Five Paths to an Online Income, where I take you step by step through five things that I do that keep food on the Woods household table and how you can do them too. Check it out at pathstoincome.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. We are discussing all this impeachment talk today with Kevin Gutzman, who is both a legal scholar and a historian. He holds his law degree from the law school at the University of Texas at Austin and his PhD in history from the University of Virginia, the author of numerous books, including James Madison and The Making of America, and the book the two of us wrote together, Who Killed the Constitution? I wanted to talk to Kevin about current events and also about the historical dimension of impeachment and the constitutional aspects. And so here he is. Kevin, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Tom.
All right. Glad to have you because we've got a topic that combines current events and history. And I always enjoy reading what you have to say on both things. So we're talking about impeachment. Let's actually start not with current events, but in history, and in particular with the Constitution. How are we to understand the High Crimes and Misdemeanors Clause, and what kinds of things were thought to rise to that level?
Well, in the Philadelphia Convention that wrote the Constitution, the original language of that clause referred to maladministration. And there was an objection that maladministration would be in the eye of the beholder, and so essentially any high official be susceptible of being impeached at any moment. Then came back the alternative from George Mason of Virginia, the language high crimes and misdemeanors, which had a long established definition in the jurisprudence of the English House of Lords, British House of Lords. And so that ultimately was the language that was accepted by the full convention and found its way into the ratified Constitution. In the case law in the English House of Lords, then British House of Lords, the key case is the impeachment of the Earl of Strafford, who was the chief advisor of King Charles I. People who are familiar with English history will know the name of Charles I. So essentially what had happened was that Charles had come into a long-running spat with the English House of Commons over taxes, and finally the Earl of Strafford recommended that King Charles could bring his Irish army to England and use it to intimidate the English House of Commons. When the English Parliament found out about this, Strafford was impeached by the House of Commons and convicted and executed with corruption of the blood by the House of Lords. So notice this was not a criminal offense. There was no law in England against telling the king he could bring an Irish army to England. But what it was an offense against the Constitution of England. And, of course, this is what I understand to have been meant by this language when this was George Mason's final proposal in the Philadelphia Convention, that a high crime or high misdemeanor was an offense against the Constitution. So not just dodging one's taxes, but, say, for a federal judge to legislate or for him to refuse to enforce a constitutional provision in favor of a defendant.
All right. So now starting to maybe, let's say, transition a little bit into our present day, is it therefore your opinion that impeachment should be, if anything, and not just of the president, by the way, but that impeachment should be much more feared as a potential penalty than it has turned out to be in practice?
Yes, actually, I wrote my first master's thesis, which was for a Master of Public Affairs at the LBJ School, on the subject of, quote, problems in federal judicial impeachment. And the conclusion I came to was that the impeachment power has been used far too seldom. It ought to be used more frequently until these rapscallions in the federal government get used to the idea that they ought to abide by the Constitution. So essentially, the Congress can make officials in either of the other two branches behave and just essentially has decided almost never to do so.
Well, in recent years, though, at least with the president, we did have the impeachment of Bill Clinton in 1990, and now it looks like we're heading toward that with Donald Trump. So let's say something then about the specifics of these cases. I first of all, I find your Facebook timeline to be of immense value. The articles you post, the occasional comments help me to navigate a lot of important issues. So it's not surprising to me in light of all your commentary that you're well prepared to discuss what we're talking about today. So let's talk about the circumstances here that led to all this hoo-ha about this telephone call with the Ukrainian president. So apparently, this is not the first time that one of his conversations has been, let's say, has not been kept private. What do we know about this?
Well, by my count, there have been three of President Trump's private conversations with foreign heads of government that have been disclosed to the public. This last one was, I guess, literally by his doing, but it was going to be made public by a quote-unquote whistleblower anyway. And then we had two previous ones. And this seems to me of a piece with, or to be part of an ongoing campaign by the Democratic Party and its adjuncts in the larger bureaucracy to oust Donald Trump from the White House. You know, we first had a large controversy over the fact that his Democratic opposite number in the 2016 presidential campaign, Hillary Clinton, had set up a private server, an email server that she had control of, instead of leaving even not most highly classified email communications in the secure government system that she was given access to because she held one of the half dozen top positions in the executive branch. And now we come to find out that here's the reason why Hillary Clinton wanted to have most of her communications be susceptible only of her own disclosure, that the 33,000 emails that were under subpoena and were destroyed by her nonetheless, likely one infers included language at least as damaging as, you know, offhand questions about whether any Republican had committed any kind of crime in a foreign country. It seems to me that, first of all, what Trump is accused of having done, as long as there was no quid pro quo involved, and perhaps even if there was, it's not any kind of offense. So I have kind of a distaste for his public rhetoric, put it mildly, but I don't think that for the president, especially in communication with the head of state of a foreign country with which we actually have a new treaty about cooperating and enforcing each other's laws, I don't think there's anything that's a constitutional violation of what he's being accused of in this instance, even if he had done it, which doesn't seem clear to me he had done it. So I think this is a case in which maybe it's a unique case in which the impeachment power is being abused for partisan purposes.
Huh. Okay. Now that was more or less what I expected you to say, but I wasn't sure exactly how you were going to arrive there. Again, I'm kind of using you not just for your legal knowledge, but also to supply some of the background into the situation we're in. What is your impression of the so-called whistleblower, who, you know, is our source, I guess?
Well, we don't know his identity for certain, but the most recent information I've seen about him in the press is that he had some formal relationship in the administration of Barack Obama to John Brennan. John Brennan, of course, was the CIA director who has come out as a full-throated opponent of Donald Trump, and just a highly partisan fellow who's now giving regular commentary on one of the openly partisan television networks. And it's unsurprising that this guy also turns out to be a registered Democrat and is really the kind of person you would have thought would fall under the umbrella of what the Trump people during the campaign were referring to as the quote-unquote deep state.
You referred to the, just in private correspondence with me, the House's investigation, quote-unquote, as a publicity stunt. What do you mean by that?
Well, there hasn't been a formal resolution to initiate an impeachment process, impeachment investigation. And more importantly, I don't think that the instances of supposed misdoing with which Trump is being charged or of which he's being accused really amount to anything. So even if he had done these two things that are at issue now, my response would be, well, so what? They're are many things you could find in the records of virtually all the presidents in my lifetime that I think would qualify as actual impeachable offenses, and these are not among them. So it just looks to me like a new aspect of what's apparently going to be the permanent Democratic presidential campaign we've bled over from 2016 into 2020, and it's never stopped.
What do you think about Nancy Pelosi's position in all this? I mean, she had been against moving toward impeachment, obviously before this whole thing blew up. But this whole thing, you could imagine a world in which this didn't lead to such a hysterical response. How do you feel like she is positioning herself here? I mean, she is in favor of impeachment, it looks like now, but she's really trying to balance. She's got a delicate balancing act here. What do you think about it?
Well, it's a funny thing that in our day, Nancy Pelosi has come to be a kind of symbol of moderation in the Democratic Party, because I, for one, can remember when Jean Kirkpatrick, speaking at the Republican National Convention, referred to quote-unquote San Francisco Democrats, and that was a successor term to McGovern Democrats. In other words, the most left part of the party. Nancy Pelosi has not moved to the right since then. What's happened is that the Democratic Party has moved substantially even farther to the left. So, but it is true that she apparently thought that tactically it was an unwise idea to pursue impeachment of Trump, because what happened in the Clinton instance was that impeachment meant that Democrats were mobilized at the succeeding election. But I should note, of course, that one significant difference between the Clinton incident and this Trump matter is that in Clinton's case, there actually was an independent counsel under the old, now lapsed independent counsel statute, whose report found and said forthrightly that Clinton had committed crimes and named them. So there's nothing like that in connection with Trump. There was a long-running investigation by an independent counsel, which is not the same thing as the old special counsel, and its report, the Mueller report, concluded that there weren't any such instances of Trump's having committed specific crimes. So it makes some sense that Pelosi would say, well, I don't want to pursue an impeachment when we don't really have misdeeds to which we're going to end up being able to point, and we're likely just to make more of Trump's support manifest at the polls in 2020. That, I think, is where she stood. On the other hand, it seems that over time, people who identify as Democrats or who are Democratic likely voters have become more and more convinced that there just has to be an impeachment vote in the House. So here we are. They're pursuing a kind of kangaroo investigation, which, unlike previous impeachment investigations of presidents, has not provided for any subpoena power in the minority or any role of the out party, that is the off party, the president's party, in investigating the matters at issue. And it's, I guess, Pelosi must think, well, even if this leads to heightened Republican turnout, I can't resist it, because we have more than a majority of the House now saying that it wants an impeachment vote. What can she do? So, again, Jean Kirkpatrick, I think, would be surprised to see Nancy Pelosi as the voice of moderation in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. All right. Now I want to talk about the president's response to all this, and we'll do that after this break. Some of my listeners say to me, Woods, I can't take any more book recommendations from the Tom Woods Show. I already have so many books to read. Where do I even begin? I've been there. I know what you're talking about. Well, let me recommend Blinkist, the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down so you can read or listen to the main points in just 15 minutes. I use Blinkist when I'm driving my daughters all over town, and in 15 minutes, I can feel like I've consumed a book. In fact, if you have a typical commute, it's entirely plausible that you could read the equivalent of 4 books a day. I'm a real booster of The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and also Getting Things Done by David Allen. 8 million people are already using Blinkist, and it has a massive and growing library. Well, right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/woods. All right, let's talk about Trump's response to all this, which has been, I guess, stonewalling. I don't know what word we want to use, but just non-cooperation. So elaborate on that a bit. And is he within his rights to do that?
Okay, well, there are several issues here. One is his public response has been just more and more kind of unhinged seeming tweets and public statements about treason and so on. In his opposition, I find it, I would say, off-putting, but it actually at some point it could be considered kind of startling that the president says the kinds of things that one finds on this president's Twitter feed from time to time. Now, as to whether he's going to cooperate in this investigation, the argument the Republicans are making and the argument the Trump administration is making is that it's not actually an impeachment investigation until there's a vote of the whole House to have an impeachment investigation. There's an argument here. One side, the Republican side, says every past impeachment investigation into a president has begun with a vote of the whole House to have an impeachment investigation. And that's when, as I mentioned before, the rights of the minority to subpoena and to be present for depositions of witnesses and so on kick in. On the other hand, although it's true that these things have been done in the past, there's no constitutional requirement of them. The Constitution just says that the House can impeach by a majority vote. So I think there's not a very strong legal argument that the minority has a right to be involved in the investigation in the ways that it's been in past instances. But I suppose perhaps eventually the House will have to take the administration to court to wring compliance with its various subpoenas out of it. Now, the other thing to notice about this is there was, decades ago, a book by Raoul Berger, one of my very favorite historians, about what he called the constitutional myth of executive privilege. His argument was there's no such thing in the Constitution as executive privilege. The executive is just supposed to execute the policies made by the legislature. And so the president doesn't have ultimately a right to keep information from the Congress if the Congress insists on having it. I actually find this a pretty appealing argument myself. So I think when it comes down to it, the president is going to end up, or the executive branch is going to end up having to comply with what the House is insisting it cooperate in. However, whether that'll take us beyond the 2020 election is a different question because, of course, federal courts move exceedingly slowly.
What exactly is it that they're demanding at this point?
Well, they want various people to come testify. They want various people to provide documents. They've demanded lots of documents and several people to testify. And the White House's position is, no, we're not coming. No, we're not sending anything. Until you have a vote of the whole House of Representatives, we're not going to do it. If you were actually, quote unquote, actually moving on impeachment, that would be one thing. But you don't have a right just to conduct a fishing expedition. As I was saying before, there's no constitutional warrant in the idea that the House can't investigate pursuant to its impeachment power before it has a full vote of the House to have an impeachment investigation. All the Constitution says is that it can impeach by a majority vote. So I read it as meaning that in this instance, the House has the same investigatory powers. All the committees have the same investigatory powers in relation to an impeachment investigation that they have at any other time without having a special vote. And I bet you that eventually a federal court will say the same thing. So for now, the Trump people are just flouting these subpoenas, but in the end, they're going to have to comply with them.
Now, the question becomes the time frame involved here. I mean, the courts move slowly, but maybe in a case like this, they might speed it up given the gravity of the situation. But you've got an election right around the corner. And so is this going to be dragging on all the way through that? And then secondly, there is this strategy, it seems, that I think the Democrats are at least implicitly pursuing, whereby they feel like if they can just keep up the constant barrage of attacks and accusations that the country will just get exhausted, say, all right, we'll just get a new president. I can't live like this all the time, on edge. And like people's mental health, for some reason, they're allowing their mental health to be damaged by what's going on in Washington. That's scary in itself. But I think the strategy, especially now with this impeachment thing, it just becomes, all right, look, just give us Pence or give us a Democrat or whatever, just get this thing over with.
Well, actually, some of it is intentionally calibrated to yield that result. So, for example, last week, Chairman Schiff of the Intelligence Committee in the House issued a subpoena for one of the ambassadors, one of the many ambassadors in Europe, to come testify and to bring particular documents. And he had two business days lead time on this. Well, anybody who's ever had anything to do with a trial or with testifying in court or any such thing knows that 2 days to prepare for testimony and assemble a large number of documents is a joke. That's impossible. So then, of course, when it turned out that he answered that he couldn't make that date, then Schiff made a public statement about how, well, this is, he's going to read a failure to appear or failure to provide the documents as more obstruction. You may have seen that in the news last night, right? That's more obstruction. Of course, they didn't give this explanation for the quote-unquote obstruction. I think then that the Democrats' main aim here is to whip up fervor in their own supporters, which, of course, is a time-honored tactic for the out party to adopt in opposition to the president.
Do you think, even though we're already seeing Biden slipping in the polls, do you think he winds up being harmed by this? The media is really going out of its way to not mention that, you know, you might be wondering what it was that Trump was asking about with the Ukraine president, but they have no curiosity about this whatsoever. It's the fact that Trump did it as opposed to, well, what is the it that he's trying to investigate or talk about is just like gone. But do you think eventually this hurts somebody? I mean, that's assuming that something, you know, disreputable was done, which, by the way, seems fairly likely given his son's complete lack of credentials.
Right. Well, you and I have discussed the prevalence of this kind of arrangement off, you know, repeatedly over the years. The outstanding example of this kind of thing that comes to mind for me is that immediately after the Gulf War in the earliest 90s, you know, which was, of course, during the presidency of George H.W. Bush, the Emir of Bahrain gave an oil partnership headed by Neil Bush an oil lease. Well, Neil Bush was not even in the oil and gas business. So what did that have to do with anything? And of course, the answer was he was giving money to the Bush family for throwing Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. And nobody said anything about this being inappropriate. And we have this kind of thing, I think, throughout our government. Foreigners know this, right? So America's government is, I'm not saying it's true of every individual in it, but a lot of people in our government are corrupt and take this kind of payment. And this particular Biden, it seems an especially egregious example. It's not just that he was getting money for something that's not really in his bailiwick, but apparently he's not the kind of person you would entrust with any serious endeavor. So. Yeah. Whether Democrats will decide this is important is an interesting issue. We've seen significant, you know, poll slippage for Biden in the last few weeks. I think it's probably mainly because Democrats at large had not realized or remembered what a doofus he is, and now they're starting to notice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I think that's probably the main explanation, but could be that this has something to do with it, too.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I think probably minor. I think it is more a matter of he doesn't have the energy. He's not progressive enough. He slips up all the time. He looks like a fool. He's never been an impressive figure. Yeah, he's not smart.
No, not at all. He's actually, you're being too kind.
I mean, he's there just to open his mouth and repeat platitudes all day. That's what some people want in a president. That's what they want.
Right. Well, you can tell that he's just not sharp when he comes out and makes statements about how in the good old days he used to cooperate to good effect with Jim Eastland and Herman Talmadge. Who says that in 2019? You think, well, not a politician, but there he was. He's a dear friend of mine, he said. Yeah, okay. Strom Thurmond was a dear friend of mine. Maybe he was, but pretty dumb politics. Who would say that? people don't remember either that Joe Biden is the guy who cheated his way into the bottom seventh of his class at Syracuse Law School. So that's pretty spectacular accomplishment, I think.
That is a spectacular accomplishment indeed. So I hate making historians predict things because I liked, we normally post-dict things, right? I can tell you for sure what happened in 1888, you know, but right. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But I mean, look, obviously they vote to impeach him and then they fail to get the votes to remove him from office. And that's the end of it. I mean, like, I already know that's what's going to happen unless there is some absolute bombshell that's hidden somewhere. But geez, they would have, some whistleblower would have found that by now. If there were any, it would have been found, given that the whole apparatus is against him and spying on him and listening in on his conversations, we would probably know about it by now. But so failing that, it seems likely that what I've just described is likely to happen. So then what's the result? The Democrats rile up their base. Trump riles up his. The difficulty with Trump is that over the past 4 years, I don't think he's done very much to expand that base. And he's irritated the base with an issue here or there, but I don't think he's reached out. I mean, I hate to sound like some wimpy. You have to reach out to other people. But I just mean he could have appeal beyond his base because there are plenty of people on the other side of the aisle who will agree with him on certain things if only they knew he believed in them. And he really has made no effort to reach to them. So I feel like his base has stayed the same or shrunk. And the Democrats, I don't know how big they are, but I know they're loud and they'll have a lot of money. So what do you think comes from all this?
Well, it's really is surprising. I think one thing that strikes me about the Trump presidency is he's the first Republican since Reagan who's become president and then actually tried to keep his campaign promises. You know, that's something. And actually, if you look at the particular campaign promises he's been trying to keep, they hit not only a wide array of Republican Party groups, but also some constituencies that typically are highly opposed to Republicans. So, yeah, even a competent political manager in the White House could be winning him more plaudits than he's receiving. But, I guess Kellyanne Conway is not the sharpest at that. So I don't know. I don't know how he's actually going to end up being reelected myself. I can't see how somebody with such abysmal popularity figures does that. On the other hand, we do have a situation in which it seems we were talking earlier about how Nancy Pelosi has come to seem a paragon of moderation in the Democratic Party. But look at the presidential candidates. Virtually all the people who would strike you as somewhat moderate, or, you know, the ones who would say they're capitalists or, you know, these people have dropped out already. And now we're down to a full array of people Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez can approve of. Right. So if it's Elizabeth Warren, it's not going to be hard for Trump to say, in black constituencies, especially in the South and Midwest, look what she's done with affirmative action. What do you think of that? So I guess I could see how Trump could be reelected, even though he remains as unappealing a candidate as he was last time.
Yeah, I think what could happen is he winds up going up against somebody like an Elizabeth Warren. And at this point, the Democratic constituencies are requiring of their candidates that they believe increasingly bizarre things. And all these are things that are believed in fervently by 15% of the public and reluctantly, foot-draggingly-ish by another maybe 20%. But if they had their way, they probably wouldn't. And all he needs to do is just hammer away and hammer away and hammer away. And there'll be trivial issues, but when have we had an election not on trivial issues in our lifetimes? I mean, okay, I'm sure, I know, I'm probably overstating that, but you know what I mean? Like, it'll be based on that. And I think that's where he shines. He's very good at picking out the crazy, wacko things that they've committed themselves to, and he just hammers them home and hammers them home and hammers them home.
I think that's entirely possible.
So that's his path. That's the only path. That's the only path I see.
All right. Well, actually, you know, within the last week, he has made some progress on keeping one of his significant promises, which is not marginal, and that is taking American forces out of Syria. That could actually happen. This is one reason. I think the two main reasons the establishment opposes Trump are that he wants to bring soldiers home from specific theaters, not just a few guys here and there, but he wants to denude Syria of American military men. That's one thing. Another thing is he's doing things that are contrary to their just fervent religious devotion to abortion. I think one ground on which people become Democrats is the fear that somehow, somewhere, somebody might be having one less abortion. And Trump has taken an array of measures that are likely to lead to that result, even if some of them, like appointing originalist judges, aren't intended to lead to that end. So this, I think, is a reason why your typical activist Democrat or your typical career federal bureaucrat are going to dislike him.
All right. I think I've put you through enough talking about all this stuff. But this is what I just wanted to get your impressions of the situation. And right. You know, as I say, it's 2020. Who even knows what's going to happen? But with the impeachment thing, it seems like an inevitability. We know what'll happen. We know what the result will be. The question is, does it really weaken him or not? I don't know. I mean, you can argue both ways. It could. Right. It could prove definitively to his people that, you know, when somebody gets elected who says he's going to help the public, this is what happens. I mean, he can play that card forever, and maybe that does help. I don't know. But in any case, yeah. KevinGutzman.com is where you should go to find out more about Kevin, GUTZMAN. I'll link to Kevin's books. Kevin is a prolific and important historian. I'll link to them at TomWoods.com/1511. You should check those out. And Kevin, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, before we wrap up for today, I have a special message for anybody who may be considering having children. I have a resource for you, cost you nothing, that could well help you. And it's a resource created by a Tom Woods Show listener named Brianna Williams. She has a website, briannawilliams.life. And in particular, she has a free 5-day mini journey where she takes you through the kind of body and mind preparation that's going to be helpful for you to have a pleasant and healthy pregnancy. She's going to provide you with knowledge, with resources, with guidance, all kinds of areas, health and nutrition, you name it. Very, very much worth checking out. And I've actually created a shortcut link to get you right to the page where you can get her free 5-day mini journey. And that is, believe it or not, tomwoods.com/pregnancy. There you go. That page was unused. Now it is in use. TomWoods.com/pregnancy, especially if this is your first or you haven't had children before, there could be challenges that you didn't anticipate. And I think the resources you'll get from Brianna will help you to navigate and anticipate those. So TomWoods.com/pregnancy is where you should go. And if you would like free publicity like this for your website, project, blog, then make sure before you even start it, get your hosting through me, and I'll give you a bunch of bonuses that will help you a lot, including free publicity like this. Details on how you get this stuff from me can be found at tomwoods.com/publicity. Also on that page, I have a link to all the sites that I've publicized. That's also to be found at tomwoods.com/publicity. So head on over there, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.